Hi everyone, this is Gary welcoming you to the LL Research Radio program In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, December 3rd, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research, who I will note will not be with us this episode. He is in Nebraska visiting his 96-year-old mother. Austin and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website, llresearch.org, and the community website, bringforth.org. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When sending us questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Gary, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. Is everybody on board and ready?
We are.
Good to go.
All right. We will proceed henceforth immediately into our opening riff, which comes from September 13th, 2008. Quo says, as long as one is questioning whether one is completely in the awareness of infinity, one has not yet come to the full awareness of infinity. Infinity cannot be measured. The attempt to visualize infinity inevitably puts limits on infinity and falsifies the word. It is difficult, using words, to express the utter endlessness of possibility that is wrapped up in this word. But we may say that when an entity is within the awareness of infinity, there is an awareness of perfection and completeness. The world is whole, the world is one, and there is no attempt to find one's place in it. One is one with all.
Thank you, Gary. One of my first memories, maybe my first one, I'm not sure. No, it's probably my second, third, or fourth, is lying in the crib and trying to think about infinity. I was a bright young thing, and words that always grabbed me. And this one grabbed me because I couldn't think about it. And I asked my parents, who always knew everything, what infinity was. And as they stumbled around, I could see they had no more idea of what infinity was than I. Described it as something within parameters, within thinking about cosmology, say, where such thoughts were possible. Think about it. I mean, try to think about it. Here's infinity. Okay. So infinity starts here, because this is where you're thinking about it, and goes to I don't know where it goes to. Boggling the mind. At whatever age, it is true. There's no way for the left brain to think about infinity except to make it equal to one. That's a mathematical solution. I'm sorry, I must have vibed out there. Infinity. Spirit would say that I don't need to think about it. I feel about it. My heart feels that I am a citizen of eternity and an infinite being. we are all lucky, for we have been sent out of the Creator to gather some information for Him. We don't have to know what infinity is, pay grade than we have. We have to know what service to others is. Takes us in a completely different direction. Away from mentality and into the heart. That's where we belong. As we're finishing third density and doing our best to gain polarity, we need to be helping people if we possibly can by being. It's a wonderful service. I've learned a good deal about it lately. But there are outer services that are very pleasurable as well. Find yours if you are worried about it. You can volunteer at the Salvation Army almost always. There are lots of places where you can volunteer. All they need to be is a nonprofit organization. And if you're interested, you can help. Includes us, by the way. Hint, hint. I'm sorry, I wigged out again. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very close to sleep today. I will move back and finish. Spirit, what have you to say about infinity before we quit? We have to say not to think about it, but to serve. See if you can move into the 50s from the 40s, maybe even hitting 60% of service to others. Get a nice, a comfortable bed in a bedroom somewhere in fourth density, and I'll see you there. Through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Carla. Our first question comes from Folk Love via Bring Forth. I haven't seen a question from Folk Love in a while that I remember.
Hey, Folk Love. Nice to hear from you.
First question is, how do you cope with weariness, disillusion, and fatigue, both on a spiritual level and physical level? Carla, you've had a lot of experience with weariness and fatigue.
I have, both on core and the spiritual.
Demonstrating it in this show, too.
As I go to sleep on the radio show, this is good. I'm weary. There's no question about it. Sometimes I'm very weary. Any illusions I ever had have been whacked away by life. And fatigue goes with weariness, I would think. How do you cope with it? You call on faith. There's nowhere else to go. And you get a double handful. And go on. And that is the beginning and end of it for me. Guys, do you have any more intellectual observations?
Yeah, a little bit. It's something I struggle with as well, and I haven't really found a great coping mechanism either besides maybe just napping sometimes. But one thing that does help me is to sometimes remember and utilize the concept of death and rebirth as an archetype. Ra said that each moment, and certainly each diurnal period of the bodily incarnation, offers death and rebirth to one which is attempting to use catalyst which is offered it. So in the idea of death and rebirth, I think we have a much more nuanced and applicable concept than literal body death.
Mm-hmm.
I think that in any moment that we're feeling weary or disillusioned or fatigued, we can just let go and allow ourselves to fall into the weariness and allow ourselves to essentially die to whatever it is we're weary of and allow ourselves to then be reborn into that moment with a fresh new perspective and a less weary outlook. This is, it helps sometimes, but other times I can try to let myself do that and it just doesn't seem to do anything at all. So maybe just remembering the concept of death and rebirth and remember that at any moment we can allow ourselves to be reborn, like Ra is talking about, it helps sometimes.
Yeah.
That's a really wonderful thought. I was kind of headed in that direction, but didn't let it blossom as fully as that thought has. I was going to echo also, Austin was describing falling into it, and I was going to echo as well that the period of weariness or fatigue may be needed. It may be a balance to overactivity, or it may be because you need to pull back your energies in order to allow deeper processes to work their way through you. But in either event, I think acceptance is needed, so in which case then rest. Rest as much as you can. Rest and do nothing, or spend time in empty space, unburden your mind, meet your obligations, of course, as best as you can, but reduce your projects and your workloads as much as possible. I've found this helpful because my own patterns tend to lean towards overactivity, too much busyness, so when that fatigue hits, it's good just to lay down and do as nothing as best as I can. And I attempt to kind of release that personal will that wants to grab hold of life and shape it into something of its own liking. At the same time, you know, if you do feel like weariness or fatigue has gone on for too long or would like to balance that weariness or fatigue, maybe there are sources of strength and inspiration that you can turn to that invigorate you. For me, that's being outdoors, being physically active, love making, reading a good book, having a good conversation, watching a movie. All of these can help ameliorate the effects of fatigue for me. And it's important to remember, too, that the body complex plays a big role in the integrated functioning of fatigue and energy distortions. And just getting, as basic as it sounds, cardiovascular exercise at least a few times a week can be really helpful in counteracting that. I have thoughts on delusion that I wanted to speak to, but so as to not make my own response too long, do you guys have anything further to add?
Only that we're awfully glad you're back.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It feels good to be back.
Good to have you back. On the topic of weariness, I was just thinking that it could be, in terms of the energy centers, I think some people experience weariness because they don't tend to the so-called lower energy centers, especially the red ray. I think red ray is what gives us sort of the vitality for life. And so if you're kind of skipping ahead and concentrating all of your focus on the spiritual higher energy centers and kind of neglecting the lower energy centers, that might be a source of weariness.
That's a really good point, especially for this demographic, Law of One readers especially, who have that yearning to work in the higher energy centers and read material about work in the higher energy centers and then want to run right forward into that.
Yeah, you'll just burn yourself out if you do that. Excuse me, Gary, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, there's a needed and valid insertion. Thank you.
I think the lower energy centers can sometimes seem kind of tedious and mundane and just not as fun or interesting.
I don't find them that way, no.
But really they are kind of essential. They are kind of a basis for the higher energy centers. So if you don't have that balanced functioning in the lower energy centers, you won't have the overall balanced functioning.
When I was crystallized and I couldn't sit up or stand up, the road back for me was cooking, because once you start a white sauce, you don't stop. You've got to continue stirring until that thing melts, or you just wasted all your time. And so I would hold on to the stove and keep standing until it was done. And I greatly made my stamina better when I did that. And eventually got back to cooking full time and acting, functioning full time in the real world. The real physical, I should say, world. Everything's real, but the real physical world has a certain, je ne sais quoi, of reality to it. Takes place in real time, and in, you know, we don't move any quantums forward or backward when we're cooking. We're focused right on the dish, putting it together. And I've always loved the smells and the scents of herbs and the fun of adding them. And, you know, what would this do to that dish? And finding out. I always loved that. And, you know, seeing if my taste was correct, would it really work? That's so much fun. And to me, fun existed even in housework, because I could talk to the things I was cleaning up, and they would thank me for doing it really well. So I had a good time when I was working in the real world, in whatever chakra that might be. Certainly, I could probably transmute them all into the spiritual chakras. Just by the way I approached them, I always approached everything as something spiritual. What is that book, Chop Wood, Carry Water? Did I get that straight? I have never read it, but it just sounds like it talks about the benefits of physical life as a spiritual way of moving on.
A lot of us can get lost in our heads, in our minds, thinking about things, conceiving, analyzing, solving, and I think we need to, that process is worthwhile and fruitful, but we need to make contact with the world,
yes.
So-called, like you said, Carla, stirring that roux, I presume, is that what you were talking
yes,
about?
Uh-huh.
One of your roux with the flour that uh-huh. burns if you don't continually stir it?
Yeah.
For me, I love, Carla mentioned cleaning, and that it triggered me to remember that I love cleaning my own space. I love the process of it, and I love the result of it, and I love how it feels afterwards. And I've wondered if in the act of physical cleaning there's this corollary of sort of internal realignment and tuning of energy too. So I think we need to get our hands dirty, so to speak. We need to interact with the world.
Mm-hmm. I think there really is, and certainly when Jim and I were doing the planting and the weeding, I was the weeder. Jim was a planter, and that's because I have a brown thumb and kill anything I plant. So I stay away from the planting, but I'm a great weeder. And I love doing it, making the space look so pretty, like you said, Gary. Just deepening it up and making it look so, so pretty. And Jim felt the same when he was working, you know, to plant, to garden, to do what he wanted to do, change things around, whatever. And he does it yearly, if not more often than that, changing things around for homecoming. So I never know what I'm going to see until he finishes creating homecoming that year. Finds his health and peace in working in the art. He comes back from working in the art and he's just as pleased as punch. Just a wonderful state of mind. And I love what it does for him.
And I think each of us have unique points of access to the world and unique avenues for that expression and exploration and interaction that strengthens and reinvigorates us. But you can hear it in Carla, hear the key underlying principle that is the linchpin for all of this in the way Carla describes her activities, and that's a love for those activities. Ra describes not just those activities, but those activities as expressions of love. Ra describes vital energy as love of life, essentially, in shorter words. And with that love of life, Ra says that even the most physically distorted entity can endure and thrive and grow. I'm paraphrasing, of course. But without that, even the healthiest physical complex will perish and die. So that which trumps everything else is loving life. And there may be some of that weariness and fatigue may be linked, I think it's a wise point, Folk Love, may be linked to disillusionment, to losing that love, or closing the heart to life in some way.
Good point indeed. If you take the supposed disillusion and really look at it, it may not be so in truth. It may be more weariness than disillusion, so that you can't see beyond the next hill. And therefore, can't see that it's not an illusion at all.
On that topic of disillusionment, this question gave me a moment to consider what it is. And to the best of my abilities, it seems that disillusionment is expectations that aren't met or fulfilled.
Yes.
Or greeting a world that doesn't seem to meet your conceptions about the world, that you reach the conclusion that the world seems, at least, dirtier or uglier or more distorted or more impure or less loving than your conception about it, so you become, therefore, disillusioned. The world has not met your expectations. But I think that is a profound spiritual lesson, because it is the nature of life not to meet your expectations. Rather, life confronts your expectations and forces you to release them. So if grappling with disillusionment, which I think 100% of spiritual seekers have or will eventually do, my thought is that it's an excellent opportunity to exercise faith. Faith that however things may seem to your eyes, or to your perception on the surface of things, that all is indeed well, that there are no mistakes, that life, however it may be manifesting, can be trusted. And that faith, which is a result of an act of will, though paradoxically it is also a surrender, that faith takes you beyond disillusionment and beyond knowing and beyond needing the world to be any certain particular way. That faith opens you up to surrender, to relinquishing your concepts about who you think you are and what you think the world is or should be, and simply resting in what is already happening, the way the world already is. And in that is a relinquishment of resistance to the moment. And when that resistance begins to dissolve, then so go with it fear and anxiety and stress and worry and doubt and disillusionment. So that's my thought about how to grapple with disillusionment. It can be grueling and tough and deep, and when you're in that state, when you're in that place in your mind, the world reflects that back to you. You turn on the TV, or you look out the window, or you have a conversation, and that's what you see, your disillusionment. But I think you can make a slight shift in orientation inside and begin to focus on and feed faith, and that faith will grow and will transform your perspective. Austin, yeah. Or Carla, any?
That's a lovely thought. No, I think I expressed them before.
Just,
you know, I think the thing to do when in doubt, when feeling disillusioned and weary, is to get up off the keister, if you possibly can, and do something, if possible, something of service. Write a thank you note. Send flowers to somebody that really deserves it but would never expect it. To a stranger on the street with no expectation that they will smile back. Just the love of life overflowing. Just get up, get out, walk a block. The wind will clear your head. You'll feel better. You really will. A generation before me, they called walks constitutionals because it made your constitution sit up and straighten out. Get everything to its default position, you know, shuffle, shuffle, shuffle. And that's a valid point. Get up and take a constitutional around the block. Just do it. I mean, I don't promise anything, but I suspect that you'll find a better mood at the end of the walk. Especially if you just forget everything. Do not think. Just walk. Just walk and maybe sing.
The first half of your response, Carla, is a really awesome idea, and I'm glad you said it because it didn't pop up in my conscious mind. And that's the suggestion to find some way to help somebody else. Like you said, smile without needing a return smile. Send flowers to somebody. Write somebody a note. I think a lot of our own pain, at least I've noticed this in my case, a lot of our own pain and sorrow comes from a sort of self-indulgence or a self-cocooned, isolated focus on ourselves and our pain and our difficulty and why the world isn't working for us or why our expectations aren't met. And meanwhile, it will forever be the case, there are other people in pain and other people who hurt and other people who are experiencing their disillusionment. So to turn your focus to asking yourself, to changing your focus to asking yourself, what can I do to help other people? I think takes us out of that self-insulated cocoon and opens the energies to be moved through the heart again. And in seeking to help others, we can, of course, do so by ignoring our own difficulty, but I think more often than not, seeking to help others also helps us to help ourselves.
Yeah.
Austin, you were about to say something before Carla and I replied on that point.
Yeah, secondary to all of that, I think what you guys are talking about is primary in discussing this topic, but secondary to all of that, I think it's good to remember that we have an unseen support system, that their ability to support us is empowered by our request. So throughout all of that, as long as you focus on what you guys are talking about and just really just getting up, go for a walk or doing something and trying to get through this yourself and like pushing yourself outside of your comfort zone, you can also send a request to your guides and your family and your friends that might be waiting to give you some form of metaphysical help, and they just need your request in order to get it down to you. It has worked a few times for me, and so I think that's a good way to help find that motivation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes in clock time just a couple seconds to turn to ask for help, and I think we can become cut off and forget that we can always ask the universe, and in so doing something will respond on some level in some way at some time and we'll get the help that we need.
Yeah, or even seen help. It doesn't necessarily have to be metaphysical beings. If you have somebody in your life that you're struggling with something, maybe just talking about it with somebody, they might be able to help you in some way. So either one of those.
Great round of replies, guys. Do you have any further thoughts on that question?
No.
No, that's it for me.
All right. We'll move on to Folklev's next query, which is, what is your opinion on psychics? Are they a genuine help along the path, or would it be better to put your focus and your money elsewhere? Any personal experiences?
I go to a psychic. She talks to angels, and I believe that her source is legitimate, and her help has been invaluable. I've also put my money down for people that didn't help at all or maybe even confused me. You have to use your discrimination greatly to know the difference, to know what's going to help you. With that caveat, I would say, you know, give it a whirl. What does anybody else have?
I think that there might be plenty of consciously dishonest and fraudulent psychics out there, but I feel like most psychics that I have seen anyways or have experienced, I really feel like they're genuine in their belief in their ability and their desire to help people. And in my personal experience, they are psychics that have a genuine psychic ability that might be helpful. Unfortunately, I think that a lot of the time their readings might be influenced by their dependence upon their skill for survival. They need to make money off of their skill. And so they might have an effect on their intuitive capabilities and might influence the intuition or skew things in a certain way. Like perhaps they'll be more likely to tell people something that they would like to hear rather than what they need to hear. Or they might drop seeds in an attempt to bring a person back for repeat business. Or they might express a genuine psychic perception in a slightly distorted way that would be better for business. However, I do think that for certain people, even with these sort of distortions that might be present, it can be very useful. There are psychics that are able to transcend this monetary influence as well and give clear and concise and straightforward psychic perceptions. And sometimes if we're unconsciously avoiding an issue or if there's something in our lives that we can't get a full perspective on or something like that, I think a psychic might be able to help fill in some gaps or point out to us something we might be overlooking. Or they might be able to point out certain paths forward that we weren't apparent to us before. They also might be able to present new spiritual challenges for us to help us with our growth, or simply offer some sort of comfort or validation that help us find our grounding in a difficult situation. I feel like the challenge is knowing when you're allowing answers to be handed to you rather than finding your own answers within the information that they give to you. Some people, I think, can become reliant on psychics and get all of their truths from these external sources without ever really taking the time to stop and look inside to see what sort of answers can be found there. And it would obviously be bad for business for a psychic to say, you need to stop coming to see me so often. So the problem can kind of perpetuate itself, I think. But as long as you're aware of your own sovereignty and your own ability to find answers and to utilize the information that's given to you, I do think that psychics can be a valid form of help along a path. For some people, it might not be for everybody, but I do think that they're not useless.
I agree with both you guys that psychics can be helpful. And Austin, I think you covered the bases really well in terms of listing some of the possible ways that they could be of aid on the seeker's path. I think whether or not they are of help, I suppose, depends on the orientation of the person approaching the psychic. And like Austin was describing, the way the psychic offers the service to the seekers. About my own experience, I've been to some that afterwards left me with the feeling that I had just flushed my money down the toilet. And I've been to one in particular, the same one that Carla describes and Austin has been to as well, that's just uncanny and good and has what to me is the right sort of orientation to the individual. There's no, at least in my interpretation, no sense that this person is encouraging repeat business or trying to create some kind of psychological gratification. The person feel like they got their money's worth. It feels very genuine and fairly pure and tuned as well. And my experience with this person was over the course of 2008 was the first time I went, so 6 years I've probably been to her, or maybe four times tops. My first experience, she delivered a message to me that was needed and for the first time helped me to be free of an attachment that I really needed to let go of because it wasn't serving my life any longer. It was old and kind of a stumbling block. Naturally, it was a message I already knew within. I knew what I needed to do, but just owing to the dynamic of the seeker of information and the giver of information, I put her into a position whereby she could confirm or verify what I already knew, and thus giving the message coming from her some kind of weight and authority. And I need to recognize, though, that I invested that message with weight and authority. No matter what a psychic says or any person outside of myself says, good or bad, confirming or denying, it's always to the individual who receives the information, it's always to their discernment to choose or decide how to evaluate that information, whether or not to use it or to place it in the life. And I think therein lies one of the great dangers of seeking information from a psychic source or an intuitive counselor or even a channeled source, is the degree to which one abdicates their own, and it's a great word, Austin, sovereignty, to the source of, to the perceived source of that information. If, for instance, this is a classic example that I fall back on. If, say, the psychic or the channeled source or whatever the case may be, but the psychic serving in the capacity tells you that your soulmate, if you're a male, is a tall, or actually it could be any sex really, but that the psychic tells you that your soulmate is a tall blonde woman who drives a red car. So while you're waiting for this blonde-haired woman to arrive in your life, you meet someone with whom you fall in love, but you don't give yourself fully to your mate because you're scouting for this tall blonde. And that's why I think we really need to take anything a psychic says with a grain of salt, so that we're not missing our actual life because we have some kind of concept planted in our head about the way something should be or the way something will be. And further, I think it's helpful to keep in mind that psychics are interpreting information or data that they receive. Whether they receive data through mental impressions or they are tea leaf reading or crystal ball gazing or in some kind of trance state, whatever the case may be, when they are speaking it to you, their conscious minds are applying some sort of filtering mechanism and they are interpreting the information that they've received. So in that translation from what they perceive and how they convey its meaning to you, information can become lost and distorted. So there's an interpretive process on the psychic's part, and then there's an interpretive process on your part. So again, you have to always keep your own authority and discernment and know that at the end of the day, you make the choice about your own course in life and how you will relate to your own life. Carla or Austin, do you have any further thoughts to add to that one?
I would just underline what you were saying, Mary. You must use your discrimination if you're going to fool with psychics. It's really safer in the long run not to, and to depend upon that which nature and spirit will give you. And if you look for it, it'll give you clues that are along the lines of what the psychics will tell you. There are energies in nature that are energy moving towards a possibility, probability, vortices in your life, and each one has a certain power to it. And I think one thing that psychics do is pick up the most likely possibility, probability, vortices. That doesn't mean that they're right. It never means they're right. It means that they're likely. So you can't hold it against them if they're wrong, because they were, after all, guessing, predicting a very gambled future. So if you want to be rash and play a little, go to a psychic that's been well recommended by at least two other people so that you can get the dynamic between the two of them and see maybe what two very possibly different personalities might find useful. And play. Realize that it is a form of play. And don't be too disappointed if you take a bad shot.
And sort of going through the personal experiences, my quick one kind of underscores something that Gary was talking about, and that the information that the psychic can give you might affect you in ways that you weren't really prepared for, don't really know, and could really kind of mess with your head. I went to this psychic that Gary and Carla are talking about, and I wasn't really expecting anything, didn't know what to expect, and it was clear that she had a very good connection and had some really great information. But then she sort of put me in the situation, the exact same situation that Gary was talking about with the blonde, just different color hair. And it just really confused me for a long time, because you just, when you have somebody who is so clearly in tune with these psychic visions or whatever, however it is that they get their information, and they offer you a piece of information like that that is so specific and so crucial to your life, that it can really kind of affect the way that you approach life, and sometimes not in positive ways. And it can be really hard to take that information and turn it into something positive. And it can be pretty confusing.
Yeah, and it's precisely for that reason you can understand why Ra always refrains from offering information that may have, that had the possibility of affecting the group's future and their decisions. Because it does become kind of a mind game when you learn about probable futures or potential futures in your own course. One that that same psychic that we're all describing said to me was that I would live a long life, and I've heard that elsewhere as well, actually, but as long as I don't do anything like jumping out of a plane. How is the F can I test that? I can't. Because if I attempt to do that and she's right, then I'm kind of screwed.
Yeah, now you can't ever go skydiving.
I know, and that's the sort of mind game that that information makes you play. So yeah, I think all of us are in consensus that you just need to be, use your own discernment, and definitely not rely on those sorts of information.
Amen.
Yeah, it's a supplementary.
It's fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Come right down to it, it's fun. And it's fun, if, it's especially fun if it works out. And if it's not so much fun, it's because you've had to use your discernment and do a little work.
Which is, we have 14 minutes remaining, plenty of time for, at minimum, JP's question. So, JP, our friend and number one listener of the show, I think.
God bless you, sir.
Let's see. JP asks, in just book one, Ra answers questions about the concept of co-creation no less than 5 times, using and relating to associated ideas such as intelligent infinity, so-called natural laws of any particular universe, galaxy spiraling energy to the solar spiraling energy of any density or illusory pattern. Can you please clarify for me, is this to imply that all of this form creation is done through logos, spirit, and or mind, or higher consciousness? Or are slightly higher beings like us in fourth, fifth, or sixth density responsible for doing some of the form creation on this and other planets? Even now, after extinctions of tens of millions of species, there are still millions of life forms on this planet. Have we, or when we do join in on the fun, I would love to be able to co-create a great vegetable, a lovely flower, and a cute little bug.
I think that some of those things are responsible. The angels and planets of us that are guardians of a certain density are responsible for certain creations at the solar level. Some are done, I think, by those of us who love to do that in between incarnations where our parameters are different and we can work at things like this more easily. Visualizations, that is. So I think that it's divided between them. So that's just my information as I have it now.
I would, the question moves into areas that I don't quite know personally, but I think I made some headway in my own thought processes by focusing on what co-creation is. And I have two Ra quotes that help me to try to tackle that question. In 54:17, Ra says, the sub-logos offers the catalyst of the lower levels of energy. The first triad, these having to do with the survival of the physical complex, the higher centers, period. The higher centers gain catalyst from the biases of the mind-body-spirit complex itself in response to all random and directed experiences. So here Ra is saying the sub-logos, or our local sun, what we perceive as a sun body, is offering and creating catalyst for the lower energy centers, and then as the entity processes that catalyst, the higher energy centers gain further catalyst from those biases. So Ra goes on to say, thus the less developed entity will perceive the catalyst about it in terms of survival of the physical complex with the distortions which are preferred. The more conscious entity, being conscious of the catalytic process, will begin to transform the catalyst offered by the sublogos, our sun, into catalysts which may act upon the higher energy centers. Thus the sublogos can only offer a basic skeleton, shall we say, of catalysts. The muscles and the flesh having to do with the survival of wisdom, love, and compassion and service are brought about by the action of the entity on basic catalyst, that's the logos offer catalyst, so as to create a more complex catalyst which may in turn be used to form distortions within these higher energy centers. And I think this is a key point here. The more advanced the entity, the more tenuous the connection between the sublogos and the perceived catalyst until, finally, all catalyst is chosen, generated, and manufactured by the self for the self. I think that final part is more indicative of what co-creator means. That is, in the earlier stages of our evolution through third density, catalyst is kind of being, it's offered to us, it's created for us, it's helping us to grow and form biases and form choices, and then as we advance, we begin to take hold of that catalyst, so to speak, and like Ra says, choose, generate, and manufacture the catalyst. So we have the capacity not only to influence our own journey, but in the more advanced stages to literally create our own journey according to our assessment of our needs and desires. And I think that is more in tune with what co-creation is. I have a further thought to offer, but I'll stop for a second to see if Austin or Carla have any thoughts.
I've got a thought that could probably be offered after you finish yours, because it's slightly different.
Okay. So, I'm reading over my Ra quote real quick. And then choose the appropriate legs.
Choose one.
So JP is asking about like higher density beings creating lower density life forms. I think that each sub logos, which is another term for us, mind, body, spirit complexes, can create its own manifestation of sub logos or sub logos. I mean, look at the things which humanity has birthed into this world that are a product of humanity's exercising of their free will, computer genes being instances of that. So I think it's possible that higher density forms can create lower density forms, but from my very small understanding, I don't think it's their responsibility to create lower density life forms. It seems the sun, the sub-logos, is what's driving that evolutionary progress. Though Ra does allude to the fact that higher density forms can create lower density forms. For instance, they talk about the Guardians or the Confederation, I forget which, creating these nuclear-resistant ape bodies as a contingency in the event that humanity did destroy itself through nuclear war. They also speak about genetic modification of third-density entities by higher-density entities. And there does seem to be a relationship of service from the higher density to the lower density, especially among those who assist the transition into and through death and who assist the harvest. But by and large, to respond to JP's question, I don't think that higher density creates lower density life forms as we would conceive of that. Austin?
That's pretty similar to what I was going to say. I think that the very primal creation is reserved for the logos or the sub-logos, but in a pretty real sense, we as humans already have started to wield this kind of power within our own realm. Like, if you look at any breed of domesticated dog, from a husky to a pug to a dachshund, those are results of humans discovering the power to create different forms of life out of another form of life. Those all, at one point, were wolves that have been selectively bred to become essentially a different animal. They're still obviously similar traits, and they're still basically the same species, but you know, you can't look at a dachshund and look at a wolf and say that they're the same animal. They are very different, and the dachshund is the creation of a human. And the same thing with things like plants and vegetables. There's lots of flowers that you might see in gardens that would not look anything like they are if they weren't bred to look like that. Most all the food that we eat, you know, if you eat broccoli, cauliflower, kale, cabbage, kohlrabi, any of those all came from the same plant. They were just selectively bred to be different and express themselves in different ways from humans. And so humans have this power already. And I think that we don't necessarily realize it, and we don't realize the responsibility that we have with it and the honor that comes with that responsibility, because like a lot of the dog breeds that are bred for aesthetic traits have really bad health problems, and it seems to me to be sort of an irresponsible use of this power to breed complete new breed of animal simply for the amusement of humans that might result in the suffering of the animal itself. So there's a pretty significant form of life creation that we have going on in third density right now that is ripe for contemplation.
Well, of course, every time a man and a woman come together in love to create a child of love,
yeah,
that child is a creation, a co-creation, which indicates that some of the best things about co-creations, or some of the worst, depending on the result.
Yeah, doesn't Ra say of Atlanteans that instead of perfecting their own mind-body-spirit complex, they were focusing on creating life forms, and implied that that was a sort of diversion or distraction?
It was a diversion into higher thought and using blue ray and green ray to create spiritual creatures. Man put into birds and animals a man's brain. What do you think? Greek and Roman lore bits came from, with a wolf's head and so forth and so on, especially the ones with a human being part of it. It's higher realms. It was not an appropriate use of higher realms.
Any further thoughts, Austin?
Nope, that's it for me.
All right, Carla, would you like to say goodbye to
I would. News? Folks, we love you all so much. Thank you so much, JP, and what was the wonderful name of the other? Folk Love.
Folk Love, yeah.
Thank you, Folk Love. And anyone else who gets the energy up to send us some questions, we really, really appreciate it. Please, 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 we're not out of the woods yet. Although JP has helped us a little bit more. So we won't be totally without questions next week, but give us a break and give us the contents of your mind. What are you thinking about? What are you concerned about? Maybe as Shuffle.
You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. If you'd like to send us a question before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Have a wonderful week. We'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we'll talk with you then.